This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be French fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown Up podcast listener. John here. On the weekend of July 15th through the 17th, 2022, Gen X Grown Up attended SFGE, the Southern Fried Gaming Expo, in Atlanta, Georgia. SFGE is a celebration of all things gaming, from pinball and arcade machines to tabletop and board gaming and everything in between. On Saturday afternoon of this year's show, Mo, George, and I presented a panel discussion centered around computer gaming during the dial-up bulletin board system era. This panel was well attended by an engaged and enthusiastic crowd, which made the session just that much more fun. We recorded that panel live and present it to you here now as a bonus episode. We hope you enjoy the memories and the laughs as much as we did.
About 2 minutes. Oh, 1 minute. Just rolled over.
Now mine says it's two.
Mine says 2 minutes, yeah.
Oh, for crying out loud.
I mean, 2 out of 3. I mean, come on.
Time is not an election.
All right.
Mine says 4, but I understand it's up to debate, apparently.
Mine says 3:59.
Oh, God.
And look, there's more people. No, don't poke your head in. Come in. I saw you. Where are you going? I'm going to yell until you come back.
They're long gone.
Damn it.
They're on the escalator.
And this is all being recorded, really, so that's going to be great.
They're running backwards against the escalator because you yelled at them now.
Kick us off, sir. Let's get started.
Oh, now wait, not yet. Wait,
now you
wait.
Agree it's 4 o'clock.
5 seconds.
5 seconds? Three. One.
Yep. Okay, now it says 4 o'clock.
Mine still says 3:50.
Oh, wait. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, now it says 4, right?
Yep.
There we go. See?
There we go. Verizon to the rescue.
Do we have a consensus for chronology yet? We know what time it is? Great. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for stopping in for our humble little panel about the BBS years and gaming during that. We represent Gen X Grown Up. Myself, this is my friend Mo and George, and we have been doing this for about 5 years now. We're online content creators. We have a weekly podcast and a YouTube channel where we create content on the reg, and we talk about things that we love growing up in the 70s, 80s, early 90s in that era.
What? Did you just say on the reg like you're a damn millennial?
Yeah, I've been talking to someone.
On the reg?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Get off my Kool-Aid, man.
Don't harsh my calm or something, they say.
Jesus, that's not even close. Man. Keep going.
Is that a thing? Don't troll my
something. I don't know. We'll figure it
anyway,
out.
It's lit.
It's lit. Okay. One more and you're off
this,
the panel.
By the way, this panel's not for you guys. This is just for us to talk to each other. Sorry.
Feel free to hang out if you'd like. But yeah, so the idea of Gen X Grown Up as an organization, and the concept was that, look, we loved that era growing up in the 70s, 80s, and that time, and we saw a lot of younger people doing content for us, and they called it retro. And we realized that's really just our stuff.
Thank you. You're right.
That's
absolutely right.
That's
so,
what I
And they throw a label on it. It's just because they didn't have a handle for what it was. They're like, no, this is just our stuff. It's just what we had, and it's just old stuff now. And that's kind of the tag they put on it. We thought maybe there would be people of our tenure that would appreciate hearing about that stuff from people who are actually there and our perspective on it. And so we cover content from both modern and retro stuff, but through the eyes of people who were there and just refused to grow up and grow out of the love of that.
Yep. Fair? Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah. Good job.
Thank you. All right. My work here is done.
Yes.
Take it over.
Okay. So John's done talking now.
Yep.
Mo, it's
Mic
up to
off.
You.
Okay, so why we're here, one of the things, like, we have every other week in our podcast, we have what we call backtrack. We look at something from the past and we just talk about what it was like, whether it be dial phones or long car trips or the Dewey Decimal
System.
VHS, yes, we actually did.
Whatever.
You are always going to bring up that Dewey Decimal System, aren't you?
I'm proud of that one.
I know you are, you librarian.
We talked for an hour on it. And it's somehow entertaining as hell, trust me. But anyway, and so one of the topics that we did talk about was BBSs. Before there was the internet, mm-hmm. there was the bulletin board system. So we figure it's a good topic here. Figure a lot of people here have experienced mm-hmm. it. And right. some of the young people probably don't know, and you'll hear about our trials and tribulations trying to get this thing working.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the reason why we thought it was a good topic for this is because right now, especially you go into the console room or you go into your living room anywhere, you've got an Xbox 360 or a Nintendo Switch or a PlayStation 5 or an Xbox One, whatever. And every single one of these devices connected online, mm-hmm. you can play with people
real
around
time.
The yeah. world.
Yeah.
We couldn't do that. No. So the only way we could do that is through bulletin board systems. And for those of you of our age range, I'm not going to call you out yet, but you remember that whole process was completely different than what we have now. Now, you turn your box on, it's already connected to your internet connection,
right?
Boom, you're on, you got your high speed, whatever. But back then, bulletin boards were individual computers, usually run by mm-hmm. some nerd like us.
Just a hobbyist.
Just a hobbyist yeah, guy yeah. who was stealing his parents' phone line, as I was. Mm-hmm. And all right.
What? Oh,
wow. So
wow.
you were high class.
Slow down, Holly.
Yeah. I'm sorry. We weren't in the corporate section of the podcast yet. But no, so you had your phone line. You had it connected up to your 300 baud modem if you mm-hmm. were lucky to have that,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And people would dial into your bulletin board or you would dial into somebody else's and you would play games mm-hmm. on these text-based, non-graphic, ASCII kind of environment.
You know, this is the second time we presented this panel mm-hmm. at a show, and you can look around and you can see people that get it, and they're going, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And yeah. the younger guy is going,
what are you talking what are you about?
What's ASCII? What,
it's just the internet, right? No, no.
No.
Right? It was certainly an experience that, you know, in the backtrack you mentioned, Mo, we talked about all the facets of the bulletin board mm-hmm. system. And it, you know, to peel away the layers of, you know, talking about, if you want to do a parallel to the internet, which is quite simple today, it was just like a peer-to-peer internet in many ways.
Sure.
You know, I'm going to set up a little, not a network, but an access point that you can access. And it's just the stuff I have on my computer. And you can remote from your computer and access to it. It started with just kind of some light messaging and some file sharing. But once you have a connectivity, especially when we got the rocket speed 2400 baud modems,
ooh,
you can
okay.
do a little bit more
you
with that.
You skip like 7 years. I was yeah, at 300 yeah. baud, you went to 24.
You could then start doing some fashion of gaming that could take place on there. But so let's maybe we just start, as you said, it's like leap forward. Let's go back to that part, talk about that experience of I'm a hobbyist. It's not even like I can turn on my computer and go, let's go play a game. Your computer said, huh? Where? What? How do you even know where to access and how to play a game? Who to dial? What's the number, right?
Right.
Load star comma eight.
That's right. It's loading a disk.
Okay. Sorry. Well, there was a game on the disk. No.
Okay.
No. I mean, sometimes you get the numbers were found through, I mean, there were magazines or mm-hmm. hobbyist magazines that people would publish their numbers and that kind of thing. A lot of it was word of mouth. Like you go on one bulletin board and they had a list of other numbers, you know, for other games and other places. Mm-hmm.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, the advertisement section was a good way that yeah. you would find that out through the messaging system. One of the ways that, you know, you talked about the Dewey Decimal system earlier, I found out like 5 or 6 bulletin boards in my town through the library
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
people were just writing on notes and literally pinning them on a regular bulletin board.
Yeah. I absolutely saw bulletin boards that had the sheet of paper with the cut, the little tabs
yeah.
with their number on it. You
right.
rip it off and it said, it's somebody's BBS and here's the number. And it was written with a pencil. And,
yeah.
Yeah. And I think one of the things too that I remember doing from back in that era, and I still have the actual physical thing, was keeping track of your username and password that you would need to log into the bulletin mm-hmm. board and which bulletin board it belonged to, right? I actually wrote all of mine down on the top of a comic book box.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I still have that same
that box
lid
with
all
sure.
those. And every now and then I'll dial that phone number and somebody go, who is this?
Yeah. And when we talk about dialing a phone number, for the younger people, we're literally talking about dialing a phone number, mm-hmm. okay? We're not talking about texting. You take your house phone. Unless if you had your own line, like some people here had, apparently.
Show off.
And while you were on there, that phone was dead to everybody else. And everyone else in your house would get, you mm-hmm. know, the worst thing in the world is you're in the middle of doing something or actually downloading something, and your mom picks up the phone.
It's a horrible experience for everyone involved. For the person who picked up the phone, they're expecting a dial tone, and they go, They hear this, I'm like, what? And the person, if you're on the one of the BBS, you're typing along, all of a sudden a string of garbage, and you're like, Ma, what the hell are you doing? And whatever you're doing, you got to start over now, certainly, once you get back on.
Well, and there were other issues as well. So I don't know when we're going to talk about this. We got our
now
stuff, but we're going to talk about it now. So when I ran my bulletin board system, it was off of a Commodore 64 with two 1541 floppy drives, right? But it was on one phone line. I didn't have my own, so I was using the house.
We're going to bring that up.
I'm just going to keep that in the ground.
Hey, relax. I had my own phone line later, so I'll take some heat later. It's okay.
But there was also the problem of, since it was a single phone line in the home, and back then, you know, you had your one phone that was on a wall in the kitchen, likely, and that was owned by the phone company itself and everything.
It had a 30-foot cord on it.
30-foot cord with a little sponge, and you would take it on. No, but using the phone line, I had to use it during certain hours.
Yes.
Because, you know, when my parents got home, sometimes they would get phone calls from people.
Because they may want to, you know, use the phone.
Or my teachers calling to tell them I did something bad in school or something. They wanted to make sure they got all those calls. But
were those frequent?
Well.
Yeah, enough.
All right, that's a different
enough
panel,
that he mentioned it.
Yeah. So usually, I think I started mine at 10 p.m. because my parents were usually going to bed about that point. The first week, or the first night, actually, I remember I didn't go around the house. And we had, even though we had one phone line, we had several jacks around the house. I didn't go around and turn the ringers off.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a fun night. That was a lot of yelling and screaming and what's going on, because phones were ringing at all hours, and it just kept waiting. Yeah, I was in trouble.
Because you remember next time.
I did. Very next night.
Now, once you had access to these systems, you had to dial in. Now, so there were a few tiers of these, and the higher up the tiers you went, the more gaming was involved. We're actually getting to the gaming, I swear to God. We're getting there.
I forgot.
The absolute hobbyists like yourself that had running on a C64, but some folks did this as, maybe it's a public service, maybe it's a part-time job or a hobby or side hustle or whatever you want to call it, but many would have multi-line, which really opened up the scope of what you could do that we'll get to when we talk about the actual games, because it started to dip your toe into that concept of what the internet became to be later, because now on a single system, you could dial in and you could dial in simultaneously, and you might even be able to real-time talk with each other in what I'm saying in an amazing voice, something that's super normal today, but it was not an average thing in the past. You would send a message like snail mail and maybe something would get back to you later, you know, previously. And that real-time access would open up another mode of kind of games that you could play.
Yeah, and I mean, so there's also, you're talking about, there were still some hobbyists doing multi-line, but most of the time multi-line meant like a corporate company that was trying to build themselves up. Talk a little bit about some of those that were developing.
Right, even bigger. Stages. And again, pre-internet, but there were several more. So we had a few of those services, right?
Oh, yeah. Bo? I mean, like Genie was a big one back then.
Now, Genie stands for what? Because this is one that I didn't know for years.
Either. I love that because I didn't use the other ones. I used Genie, which was the General Electric Network for Information Exchange. it was GE, and they had their system. They were trying to fight with, the CompuServe.
Who thinks the washing machine company is the one putting out an internet company at that time? But
well, the repair guy's bored, so maybe just spun up the system. Well, man, that's world.
Okay.
They
bring three things to life. They brought the network to life. Okay, Genie for sure.
AOL was one that came along.
AOL was the coaster company.
And there was that cusp one, too, that kind of went to the internet and stuff like that.
Who here did not use the AOL, either the floppies or later on the CDs, as coasters? Everybody used them, right? They were great coasters.
Every 30 seconds, I got a new one.
The floppies were the best because you just fix the Write Protect tab, and it's a free floppy.
That's true.
So the CDs were absolutely, you know, to pull.
Also, Prodigy.
Prodigy, right? For sure, right.
Another one?
And CompuServe.
CompuServe was a big one.
Quite frequently.
Does anybody remember any other ones from back in that day?
Yeah.
Quantum Link.
Ooh. Yeah. That was big in Commodore, right? That was a Commodore deal.
That's right. Yes, sir.
Mindspring, that's right. Yep.
Wow. Yeah. See, everyone's going, wow, memories.
Right?
See, that wow was the thing that we love doing this stuff about, because if you get it, you get it, and if you don't, you get to make fun of the fact they don't get it, and you get it. So
I guess we should get back to gaming.
Yeah, okay.
So the thing is, though, now with these bigger companies coming on, and you could have hundreds of people dialed in at the same time, which before, you know, you're lucky if you have three or four. And again, you can start playing. And I remember the early games were things like checkers. And you can play checkers, but every time you made a move, it sent you a new picture of the board with the move on it.
Right.
You know? But the cool thing was that you could actually sometimes real-time chat with the person you're playing with.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so we're talking about gaming. We might also want to go into a little bit of the other BBS functions, too, those other BBS functions.
Let's not waste time on gaming in the gaming panel.
I'm just saying, it's on the list, dude. You wrote it down.
This is your list, John. I'm just saying.
A lot of those functions ended up being support mechanisms for gaming. Like you were talking about the chat.
Right.
Originally, your first quote unquote email systems were just on that local board, right? You would send a message to somebody
just
on the board.
Usually, right?
Or maybe you would post a general message in the message room that people could read and respond back to. But pretty quickly, the one that you had talked about before, the FidoNet, right?
Yeah, FidoNet was fascinating because it was an early kind of predecessor to what the internet became, because it was really about sharing packets. So previously, if I had to go to bulletin board A, I could only talk to people on bulletin board A.
Yeah.
Right.
And then ultimately, FidoNet expanded that so that bulletin board A was a subscriber to this network, and you had a bit of almost an email address. You had an kind of where you were on the network, and it wasn't like the internet where you got the message right away. Like you're on a phone with somebody and go, I just sent you the attachment. Ding, I've got it. It wasn't like that.
Right.
It was like, I just sent a message to a guy in Sweden. When the packets make it around the world in a few days, I will get the message back when he responds. And that was really cool because overnight, they would literally zip up the messages that were outbound and upload them to the next guy as they were sharing, the path. And they were helping disseminate those messages and information across other contributing bulletin boards.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody else here use FidoNet at all?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I saw a lot of nodding heads.
Yeah. Sure. See, that was I never used FidoNet, but when you started talking about it, I started looking it up because it's such an interesting part of that era.
It's people who wanted the internet, but we hadn't invented it yet. Or like, how could we get those messages to other people?
And
again, people would use that. We used to use snail mail I have a pen pal in Denmark, and I used that for playing chess over mail. People would use that to play games, even just text-based games with their friends who were elsewhere, not co-located. And it was a great way to share that kind of gaming stuff.
Sure. Well, and we've still got a lot of time in the panel, but to get into the games, there's really two separate and distinct versions of online BBS gaming.
Okay.
There is the hobbyist who has the single line, and there's certain games, but every single one of those, what'd they have to be? They had no choice but to be turn-based.
Yeah, turn-based, text-based.
They had to be turn-based because you couldn't have two people on the game, the thing at the same time. So most of those games, like you mentioned, Mo Chess, Checkers, and the pictures that they would send, they weren't pictures, so to speak. Yeah. They were slashes, dots, lines, asterisks, designed in a way to form.
Yeah, what do I have in ANSI or ASCII that I can draw a circle or a box with or that kind of thing? Yeah, think Words with Friends today on your phone, where you have to take a turn and hope the guy gets along to do his turn eventually.
Right.
Kind of thing, right?
Yeah. And sometimes that might be an hour, sometimes it might be a day. But the key was you had to log off, then you had to figure out, when should I try and log back in? Because the bulletin board might be busy, a busy signal. Right?
Gaming was not take my turn in my game. When you got first, the busy signal was a problem, as you said.
Yeah.
But once you were able to get on to take your turn, you took your turn.
Right.
Well, I'm playing three guys in chess.
Mm-hmm.
I'm playing two guys in Battleship. I'm playing, and you mentioned, Mo, we're playing games, but we're not playing Halo here. The games were pretty much, adaptations of board games or trivia games or kind of bar games is what we were playing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was interesting, like you said, you had to play multiple, because otherwise it was just.
One game, one turn, and wait a day. No.
And it's funny how different boards, you would have to jump to different boards because certain ones had different games too.
Sure.
So I'm like, I guess I'm here to set up my checkers one. I got to go here to do my hangman one or whatever the game you had going on.
And that was a mark of, that's a good board, because they would often have to pay shareware fees or whatever to get that.
Right.
And you're like, he has that cool game that's only on a couple of BBSs because he got it to make his system more attractive to get you in there.
Yeah. I mean, it almost the first form of modules, really.
Like D&D modules.
Yeah,
that's right.
You would whatever operating system you were using to run your bulletin board system, they would have certain games that people had coded and put into modules, and you could download them from other bulletin boards. That's what I did with mine.
Mm-hmm.
I would, I made sure I picked one that had at least the starting games were all games that I enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
So there was chess, checkers, Battleship, and the Star Trek.
Star Trek.
So those are the board games. That's a great segue. Let's get into those really cool games that came out of something you couldn't necessarily have done before having some kind of an online component. So Star Trek first was a great connection. Any kind of network nerdery connects with Star Trek. At some point, there's a Venn diagram with a heavy overlap. So, Mo, did you play the Star Trek game online?
Oh, yeah, definitely did.
So let's talk about that a little.
Well, again, I mean, it's just funny because you had these mappings. This basically measured grid, and each one of those grids was like a system. And then when you went into a system, it made it another smaller grid. Was like, I think it was like 8x8.
You kind of zoom in. Yeah. Now you're in that one.
Asterisks were stars.
Zooming in, kind of.
In my imagination, I zoomed in to the quadrant.
The new page was a different view that was assumed to be zoomed in.
You know, that's something to point out, though. So you're talking about the new page, which everything would scroll up, and you would get the new thing. But back in those days, you didn't have a scroll bar to scroll back to see what you had left.
It was just a terminal almost.
Right?
Just
that was a very important part because it was only what was on your screen in the moment. It wasn't, you know, I can go back and look at my saved state or anything like that.
Couldn't take a picture of my phone.
It was much more transient. It had an expiration. It was transient. It was there and gone. It wasn't an experience I was going to go back and relive. It was all just what was left on the screen.
And the reason why I mention is because I distinctly remember looking at the grid of the screen of whatever it was I was playing and hand-drawing what I had on the screen so that when the next thing scrolled up, I wouldn't forget it.
You still have it?
So I'd have, pages of, here's this chess game in this state, and here's this checkers game in that state, and here's this.
So you can think about it offline later?
Yeah, because, you want to see what it was before they made their move. You know, it's just like any other board game. You know, that's part of the strategy.
But Star Trek in particular, because that was one that came about because of the BBSs. That didn't exist before that.
Yep.
And the fact that you had something that was one that was kind of interactive-ish, I guess I would call it, even though it was pretty much a static, made the board, and that's pretty much was it. But still, though, it was like you got that sense of discovering something. You went to a new quadrant, you had to discover it. You had to see, here's how the lay of the stars. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's Kleons, which is a big K that comes over here and kills you. But it was. The other thing was, I guess, how much my brain, I didn't see asterisks and grids, I saw a starship. I saw, a Klingon ship over there. I mean, I saw stars. I mean, that's what was going on in my head when I looked at this little map.
Just like in our Atari, right? A dot is your guy, and this arrow is a sword, and that duck is a dragon. Just pretend it is. That's the best you can do with that. And something you just mentioned sparked a thought in me that, unlike checkers and chess that are these, take our turn or whatever, this was the computer that you were dialing into remotely being the being the dungeon master, in this case, the Star Trek master or whatever, you were playing in real time with it as if you had the game on your computer, but you didn't.
Right.
Right? You don't own this game. You don't have Star Trek. You only can play this game remotely. You're basically playing a game on somebody else's computer, but because the experience is you're sitting kind of alone, a different kind of socialization, you're playing. There was just a magic to saying, I'm on another computer somewhere or across the phone line. That shouldn't work.
I think that's important to talk about, though, because so first computer system you ever owned, what was yours, Mo?
VIC-20.
VIC-20, right? Mm-hmm. You?
Atari 8-bit.
Atari 8-bit, right? And I had a C64, so we kind of got the gamut.
Big chunky 800, loved it.
But when you would get games, there was one of two ways. You could go and buy a store-bought cartridge or cassette, that you would have to load in and, put it on the right
place.
Occasionally floppy disks, I had the 1541 drives. But oftentimes, when you first got your system and you didn't have any money because, we were poor as dirt, you would get a book of games that you would have
magazine.
And you leave the computer on for 3 days because you didn't want to lose
it. I think I still have my A to Z book of computer games at the house somewhere, and it's just each letter, for each letter, there's an A game, a B game, a C game, all the way down, 26 games, and I coded them all in, and some of them worked, and some of them, I'm sure I did a typo.
I love where you're going with this, right?
Right. But the bulletin boards. It's all there.
And many times, it's
and
the
free
stuff that you would be typing in, someone else typed it in, they know it works, and they'd uploaded it via Z modem or Kermit or X modem. I just said all those to watch it. And it's this slow, you'd watch it slowly come across 2%. 3%. I went to Taco Bell. I'm back. 12%, 13%. But you didn't have to type it. It was like somebody else did it, and I had access to it without having to co-locate again and be able to say, here's the disc, Mo. It's more like dial in. Someone has provided that for you and more games for you for free.
Over the past few weeks, we've been trying out Factor Meals and their meals that come straight to your door. They deliver them to you in the mail. They drop on the front door in this freezer pack. And it's a great way to eat stress-free. And this spring, you can get delicious, ready-to-eat meals. They're fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved. And here's the cool thing, as we've all found out. You throw them in the microwave for 2 minutes, and they're ready to eat and not even requiring cleanup.
And if you can't find something on their menu that you like, then you're just way too picky.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have over 35 options. Mm. You know, they have things like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan, Veggie, and we even tried the vegetarian one, which was really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just the regular meals, but they've also got all these add-on packs, which I really love. These are right. things like, you know, breakfast or on-the-go lunches or little snacks, even like beverages that want to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So really, I mean, like they say on their site, what are you waiting for? And they're not kidding. You can get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals by heading over to Factor.
Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring.
Are you looking for good gourmet meals? Try the meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus.
Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff.
Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking.
We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for lowest carbon footprint meals.
So head to factormeals.com/GenX50 and use code GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code GenX50 at factormeals.com/GenX50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. You're listening to Gen X Grown Up. But if you have a friend who's not yet listening, why not? Tell them about us. They'll thank you later.
You know, I misspoke a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm.
I said it was free.
Yeah.
There's an aspect of BBS online connectivity and gaming that we haven't really brought up yet.
Yeah.
And you have a
on purpose.
You have a story.
Oh, we didn't mean to bring it up.
I meant to bring it up.
You didn't have to.
I'm going to.
Because you both ran BBSs, right?
Yeah, we did. But my problem wasn't running the BBS.
He has a story.
The problem is when you grow up in the middle of Central Florida and there's nothing in Polk County that you care about or has any bulletin boards, sometimes you find bulletin board systems that are long distance.
Well, so
I remember the
long
days of
distance.
Long distance was,
I mean,
like ever in New York.
Right now, long distance is only
doesn't mean
if you're dialing another country.
But we literally did an entire right? backtrack explaining and talking about long distance because that's not a thing anymore, right? But for the younger folks,
remember those area codes actually had a meaning back
like,
then?
Like often, if it wasn't your immediate area, you had to dial and it cost you money per minute to talk outside
a of
a certain region.
Yeah.
And coincidentally, often the next county was more expensive than the next state, that regional long distance. Well,
mm-hmm. And the time of day.
That was
right.
Cool.
So the
weekends are
the problem that I ran into was that I'm isolated living in the woods and nobody else has computers, especially not Atari computers in my region, but I found this bulletin board system that was a county over and mm-hmm. so you dial in and I can play games and download stuff from Antic that was there. And you know, I'll stay on for 5 minutes. I'll do it again later for 15 minutes or whatever. And it all was going great until apparently the phone bill came. and when the phone bill comes, it has like a little window. You know, they send you the thing. It had a clear window where your address was in there. But they sent it in what looked like a banker's book because it was a fold-out, like a pleated envelope because the bill was about this thick and it had lots and lots of pages. And I was actually on my computer and my dad came down the hall and it sounded pretty loud how he was stomping down the hall. And he's like, who the hell are you talking to last month all day? $500 of long distance in 1982.
Yeah.
Money. And it's $82.
Yeah.
So essentially, it cost as much as my computer to play with my computer that
yeah.
month.
In today's dollars, that's 12 months worth of detention.
That's even more beatings than it was back then. Yeah. But it's because of the It's no different today in terms of how easy it is to get to fall in love with the experience, to get addicted to playing that game, or be connected in a certain way to
and
people.
You don't think about it.
And it was brand new then, and so you just kept doing it. You're like, I know it costs money, but I'll deal with it later.
And there's different situations. So you were in the country. Mo lived in New York.
In Manhattan, yeah.
Now, I'm sure other people here lived in, you know, different city environments, urban areas. I know a lot of those cities were divided up by area codes. Everybody remembers area codes for long distance. Now we have to use them because we're running out of phone numbers until they move to some other system. But the area code itself, you might be just dialing across town, but if that area code was different, there was a good chance you were getting charged anyway. And those kinds of bills, the sneaky ones that you weren't expecting at 13, 14, 15 years old, they're the $500 whippings that you would get later.
And you can't even say I'll pay for it because I ain't got no money.
I'm just curious. Does anybody else here have a worse bill than the $500 one?
Oh, there we go.
There we go.
There's
how much
a hobbyist.
I accidentally got one. I called the BBS. I was probably about... maybe 14. I wasn't aware what the number was. Turns out it was China.
Oh! Woo! Like you were five digits. Oh. Tell me you were five digits.
It was like
$700. Oh, okay. All right. Wow. You got away lucky then.
But I was lucky because I was only on for like 6 or 7 minutes.
That's all it takes.
Yeah. Ooh. This gentleman here's got one.
Just so you know, your $500 phone bill in 1982 today
$1,535. that feels about right.
Basically,
you paid for a used car.
Yeah, a 1982 used car.
By God,
car,
I got
right?
to play games. It didn't have to type them in myself.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
that.
So yeah, it wasn't free, right? There were times when you definitely would get charged.
Yeah.
Now, did anybody like AOL? They presented themselves as the internet as they moved into
they
that
did,
age.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
they also had fees. So there wasn't just your long distance. There were per minute fees
That's
on
right.
a lot of these different systems.
Yeah.
And they would even limit, like AOL did. Anybody who was ever on AOL for any length of time will attest to this. You didn't get the whole breadth of what was out there. You got what they curated and wanted to see.
Well, they worked very hard to make people believe they were the internet so they wouldn't leave and go beyond the internet,
right.
quite frankly.
And also don't forget that you also had these lines that like, oh, if you want to do 1,200, it's this rate to sign into my BBS.
They did charge more for different baud rates.
Yeah,
if you want to go slow, it's less, but you can be on longer. It doesn't make sense.
Did anybody besides us run their own BBS? Right there.
Yep.
Well,
nice.
You had your line.
We learned that.
Anybody else?
One here. One back there. Hey, four or five BBSs, yeah.
So we've got like 20, 30 people in the room, and there's like 6, 7 people in this room.
What a percentage that is.
I know.
That's great, right? Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. I think there were a lot more hobbyists with the technology back then because you kind of had to be in order to understand how to use it. It's not like it is today where you literally power it on and there's like some kind of welcome walkthrough thing that teaches you, sets everything up for you like Windows 10.
Right.
Windows 10 is ready for you to
remember
use.
Remember when computers came with an instruction manual that showed you how to use your computer?
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Spiral bound. It might teach you some programming. It might teach you how to do some assembly. And now it's like plug it in, you watch the movie, enjoy a computer. Right?
If it doesn't work, call customer service and then you're...
So this is not bulletin board gaming related, but I want us to talk about our Amiga 500 BBS customizing story.
Yeah, well, so there's a gaming aspect.
Yeah,
so I'm going to allow it.
Okay.
Well, the Amiga was a great computer. Any Amiga users here? Oh, there we go.
Of course, multi-line guy.
This guy.
There we go.
Have we met before?
You got a
maybe?
New name.
I don't know. Did we hang out? So the Amiga was just it was really ahead of its time, and that's what Amiga users love to tell you. But they're not really full of crap. I mean, it really kind of was ahead of its time in many ways, graphics capabilities and audio capabilities, multitasking, all that. But once you were able to get those online, there were other Amiga-enabled BBSs that were run on Amigas, and what they would do, frankly, is they would enable way more interactivity than, again, it's really kind of reaching into client-server of today across the internet, rather than just spewing ASCII and ANSI text to you. It's like, okay, let's agree, you're an Amiga, I'm an Amiga, we can do Amiga stuff, so I'm going to send your Amiga information about what's going on and let your Amiga draw it. And plus, the mind blower was, why don't you use your mouse to move the pointer and click on something on the BBS, and I'll tell the remote computer that you're doing that. And they would do that with some games. You know, maybe you want to move your chess piece. You could actually click on it.
I distinctly remember the first time I logged into an Amiga graphic BBS and clicked a mouse, and it did something. I sat there for 7 minutes. Just
exactly, 7 minutes.
What I did executed something on that other computer system, and then it came back and did something, and it was quick. It was like almost instantaneous.
I love looking around the room at some of the younger faces, and they're going to leave and go, these old guys are impressed by the stupidest shit. it's amazing the things they think are cool. It's just normal stuff.
But
at some point, it was the first time that we saw it happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beauty of growing up at Generation Xer in that era, that we saw so many things make a paradigm shift from I've never heard of it to we can't live without it.
But there was another Amiga BBS story that I wanted you to tell.
Oh, what did I miss?
The modification.
Oh, that's definitely not about online games. You're literally just talking about the fact that we utilized the BBS to get instructions from some unknown, faceless, nameless person online that said, hey, you know that Amiga you have that has allocated memory, some is chip RAM, some is fast RAM. The chip RAM is way better, and you can double the amount you have by cutting this contact trace on the board. And
what could go wrong?
And I said, George, look at this, what I found online. This is great. And he said, that's a great idea. Let's try it on yours. Well,
that's a good friend, George.
Yeah, right?
Why do you think I told him I was hoping he would go, let's try it? But the reality is, the point of the story eventually is we tried it and it did work.
Yeah.
And then he was quick to say, do it to mine too, please.
Exactly, yeah.
But the great thing is that we were... It was that, again, the young face is going, so you read something online and it worked? Yeah. But
there was no malevolence. That was the difference at that point.
Yeah,
everything was way more about being helpful with people. There was more about sharing information because of that hobbyist culture
that had
to develop from the first few years of the VIC-20, C64s, the Commodore PETs, all those systems that, like you said, you had the big spiral-bound notebook, you had to read. Well, not everybody wanted to read, but everybody wanted to go cool stuff, so somebody would distill all that down. Mm-hmm. Here, do this one thing, and it's really awesome.
Well, it's because being on the internet, being on BBS, I'm sorry, being on BBSs, it wasn't just like breathing. It wasn't just on your phone or in a box in your pocket. You had to work at it. And so the people that were there were the enthusiastic hobbyists that were excited about it. And they weren't out there saying, hey, you can microwave your phone to charge the battery. They said they wanted to encourage other hobbyists to get involved in this thing that they loved. And so the things we found were not, you know, people messing around with you. It was cool stuff.
I mean, there were the occasional, I guess, trolls would be today, right? Like people, I mean, it was rare. And the thing is that as soon as you found one or if there was one, the sysop.
Yeah. Well, and the good users would dogpile on it and go, stop, and cut it off. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, there was somebody actually watching what was going on. Like, have you ever had a sysop jump into something you were doing?
Well, I mean, I was a sysop myself.
Oh, yourself,
so, yeah, I mean, that was, you know, I know you've mentioned it once or twice, the word. It was kind of voyeuristic a little bit. You would, literally, it was my computer system, and I would be watching somebody log in and type in their messages or play their game or whatever it was they were doing. At some point, everybody remembers downloading pictures one scan line at a time, right? And everybody knows.
Well, what are you talking about? I don't
there
know
was a specific
said.
Picture
oh,
that was
know.
Downloaded
what
a hell of a lot on those bulletin boards.
Famous artwork.
Good hair. Good eyes. Keep going. Nice nose.
Right.
We're still going.
$500 bill later.
But if you did see somebody, at least for me, if I did see somebody on my bulletin board that was being abusive or rude or mean or whatever, I would instantly log in, give them a quick scolding in text, and give them an opportunity to delete what they had done or give them an opportunity to apologize. And if they didn't do one of those two things, they were done. I deleted their account. And they would then, if they wanted to try and keep doing it, they would create a new account. Everybody remembers doing that. You know, you might have your one username that you try to use everywhere, but sometimes, you know, your account would get lost or expired or something. You had to do a new username.
Yeah, but I've actually had other experiences where I was on something and I was floundering or something. Like, I was searching for something, couldn't find it, or I was looking, and then sysop was like, hey, what are you looking for?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm like, you know, I was like, whoa, who is this person? And I'm like, this. He said, oh, here. And he actually walked me through. Here's how you do that. You know, here's how you do the search for that.
Well, yeah, because the commands.
Yeah. If you're running that BBS, it's like you've created this playground. You've created, I want people to come and enjoy these things, play these games, play, you know, do this messaging. And so the voyeuristic aspect you talked about was like, sometimes you would sit and just watch people play on your computer, which was fascinating. And then sometimes, as you said, if they had trouble, you were floundering, you would help them, or you could jump in. But it was one of those early aspects, especially on the early BBSs, single lines, where you had a real-time chat for maybe the first time. You're like,
That's true.
That's the part that I think that blew me away. Is like I was real-time just chatting with somebody.
And sometimes character by character. We're not waiting for a text to come in. You're like we're watching it tick as a guy types it. It's all war games.
It was like the first version of the three dots doing the little wave on your text message phone now, right?
Yeah, we see it happening.
It was very – that was – one of the unique aspects of BBS, because it was so early in computer development and connectivity, networking, all of that stuff. Every time something new would happen, every time a new game might be on a system, or every time a new like ASCII character set might get introduced to draw graphics or something like, every time it was new, it was fascinating to me every single time. Now, something new comes out, and my first reaction is, do I really give a shit about that?
Well, there's so much. You take it for granted almost, right? Yeah. I've talked a little bit about, you know, that Amiga graphics aspect, but as it pertains to games, we've touched on a couple of things I want to make sure we highlight, where the game experience was kind of dictated by how they could create an environment for you, an interface.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so text was the most predominant thing. Star Trek did that with dots and stars and the Ks and whatever. And then they started using the expanded, you know, ASCII or ANSI character set, which again they could draw, which was really stepped up the level because you could draw some boxes and some lines. And that's when they started being able to do something for games beyond just scrolling the screen. They could go up and update a region of the screen. You know, they could actually redraw a section, blank it out, and then draw a new section. Now, I always found that extremely fascinating for gaming because you actually watch the computer erase some stuff, draw some new stuff, and then move the cursor, erase some stuff, draw some new stuff. And as slow as it was almost like you got to watch the computer think how it was doing that work. You know, it's like, oh, I see, he's replacing this and doing that. It's something that happens now inside of our modern games that you don't see because it happens in between frames.
Yeah, well, so
you saw it happen in real time.
I think even with the gaming systems that we had back then, your Atari 2600s, your Intellivisions, ColecoVisions, those were so much far advanced graphically over the bulletin board systems.
Oh, yeah.
I think you're right. Seeing those comparisons even back then, it was a window into what was behind the scenes that you didn't get with a 2600 in its cartridge. You know, you plugged that lovely Pac-Man port into the 2600. But it was instantaneous, right? There was no like waiting for a program to load or anything like that. But on the bulletin board, you know, you had to be patient.
You did,
Well, I also like the fact that when bulletin boards, because there was so many limitations, that you had to get creative. They had to get very creative how they got things done. I definitely believe that sometimes limitations makes creativity, right?
Well, so I think innovation strives innovation, in limitation.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, because I think one of the early games I played, I think it was one of the precursors to Zork. Remember the old Infocom?
Like the Scott Adams game? Adventure the kind Scott of thing.
If there's anybody in the room that doesn't remember Zork, you're in the wrong room.
if people leave, I'm going to punch you.
Am I wrong?
Well, I mean, they belong. They're here to learn about Zork.
Okay,
now.
All right, fine. I'll leave. I'll let you leave.
But still, it was a way of like making this interactive game all strictly text-based. But it was, I mean, I can't tell you how many hours I spent on that. Yeah. And then that was when you go to these bulletin boards at chatter areas, everyone's talking about it. What did you do here? How did you get past this?
How'd you get the key from the damn orc? Come on.
How did you light the torch? What happened there?
Yeah. Where'd you find a torch?
Yeah, there's a torch.
Yeah, so reminding that this text adventure reminds me of kind of having the love of Dungeons and Dragons, as many of us did in that era. Like, multi-user dungeons, MUDs were spectacular and blossomed. It was a chance, again, to play kind of a role-playing game inside of that computer, and graphics didn't matter so much. They used that innovation inside of the restrictions. Like, you know what? I can tell you what your hit points are, and I can draw maybe a little antsy picture of a monster, a kobold, or whatever you're fighting, and you'll just use your Atari Duck as a Dragon mentality to figure out that, yes, that's the experience I'm having, and it was enough.
Yeah, so outside of the hobbyist mentality, I really mostly cared about playing games. Big arcade guy. I loved going to the arcade playing Galaga and Pac-Man and Donkey Kong and Dragon Slayer and all those. So trying to have that gaming experience at home First was the 2600, but as soon as there was a device that I could have control over with that Commodore 64 and setting up an online bulletin board system, my whole gaming thought mentality changed. It didn't matter whether the graphics were great or crappy. Mm-hmm. It just mattered that now there was interactivity that I could have playing with somebody else. And I really didn't even know where they were calling from. Mm. Like, they could literally be on my bulletin board from China for 7 minutes, apparently, and have a $700 phone bill and could be on there. And
There goes the guy that ever played Zork. Sorry.
Okay, bye-bye. But I would, you know, it was just, I don't know, it was just a fascinating experience every time. It goes back to that sysop voyeuristic thing, I guess, but I loved it.
Yep. Yeah. Well, it was a way of reaching out to like-minded people, especially if you live like, you know, you live in a smaller town. Mm-hmm. It's probably a lot harder to find like-minded people there, but here was a place you dial in, and that's
You walk out in the front 40 and holler, and nobody answers. That's it. that's pretty much it. Yep. So, well, to that end, you know, I know you lived in a the most metropolitan area on the planet. Right. You know, we've often talked on our show about how it's interesting that we're great friends, but we're three very different people with very different backgrounds, like super in the woods, Manhattan, and then much more like suburban. You grew up, you know, kind of. So I think it'd be interesting to talk about, which we touched on very briefly, what is the experience of... It's so different than I'm gaming with a friend, we're getting together, like we are out here at SFGE, where we go out, we sit down across a table from one another. Mm-hmm. There's that experience of a different kind of socialization that was born out of the BBS era that grew out of that, right? It's still socialization. It's different. It's a different skill set. But so here you are, you're at your computer, you have a BBS to dial into, and you start that experience of what's that like?
So, I mean, there's so many different parts of that, but if you want to talk specifically about friendships and connecting with people online, it did something for me that I did not take for granted, and even to this day, I still think about it each time that I make a new friendship in that manner. I grew up in suburbia, like you said. I had a dead-end little road in a little bitty neighborhood, and we had like six kids in the whole neighborhood that were my age range, right?
Right, that's your squad.
Yeah,
that's
that was my squad, on our dirt bikes, jumping ramps, and trying to do stuff that would get us in trouble in the woods
throwing rocks
at each other, playing army men, whatever. But as soon as I got to the age and the experience with a C64 and logging into another bulletin board system and finding, like you had said earlier, like-minded individuals.
Right.
Remember when we were really little, the only way to do that was through that old pen pal system.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This was now the modern pen pal equivalent, but again, I was kind of in control of it instead of just writing some anonymous letter that might find somebody and later on but that's just one person. This was now hundreds of people and maybe even thousands of people on the bigger bulletin board systems. That aspect of communication and being able to expand that little neighborhood pack of friends just totally.
It's revolutionary.
Yeah.
I guess for me, actually, I grew up in Manhattan. And so from there, I was like, I had thousands of kids. I mean, literally, right? Mm-hmm. But I didn't know anybody else who was interested in computers.
Okay.
You know, in my neighborhood. I mean, there's nobody really. And to find someplace that you can go on to, dial in, and not feel like the weird kid.
You find your people there, right? you had your little
like
squad.
Not be the odd ball kid.
But you found the squad of other computer people.
Right, yeah. And this funny thing is I actually met somebody who was in my school. He went to my junior high school. I was like, wait a minute. And I'm like, you're so-and-so? Like, you have so-and-so? And then we wound up becoming really good friends after that. But both of us, like, we never talked about it in class. I mean, that's something you brought up in public school in New York.
It was a more rare situation. Now, everybody's got a computer in their pocket.
Yeah.
But back then, it was a more rare, like, it was way more common to have a friend with a baseball glove that you could go out and play sandlot baseball or kickball or whatever than it was to have somebody who knew and understood, oh, I've got this thing called a computer and I've got tape drive and I've got this book that lets me put... That was a much more rare occurrence. I remember I had a conversation with two guys at my middle school, and this was before I really got into my C64. Please forgive me, but I said to them, they were talking about their computers and they were talking about playing games on them and stuff. I said, you nerds, those computers are just a fad. They'll be gone in a year. Yeah.
Isn't that your job now?
But, you know, back then it was, that's what I mean. It was so rare. Yeah.
Well, many things had come and gone like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not at a hula hoop show. Those came and went, right? But they were all the hotness for a little while.
Yeah.
It was understandable. You would think that.
Yeah. How about you, John? What was that for you?
Well, it was really just, it opened up a world that I had zero access to. I got the Atari computer because I had the Atari 2600, and it seemed like a logical progression, right? It's the reason that I buy every stupid thing Atari plasters a name on today, because it gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling when I go, there's that little logo, and here's my money. Yes. But so I went to that computer, but it wasn't, not only was the Atari not ubiquitous, having a computer was not necessarily a foregone conclusion in any household. So when you find someone else who has that computer, I met a guy who had the same thing, and we're like, dude, we're blood brothers apparently now, because we arrived at the same unlikely destination. And so we frequented the same bulletin boards and we played in the same environment. But it was just that one guy that I knew locally. But as soon as I could get out and touch the world and play those people online that I didn't know that were in the next long distance area code or whatever, it was an access again, much the same way, regardless of where we lived, we were able to reach out and interact with people in a way that had never happened before, and do it across a leisure activity that the computer itself was a hobby and a great time. Right. And then the games you like to play was an extension of that. Mm-hmm. And it was like, just, it's chocolate and peanut butter. It's both great tastes. It tastes great together, and we're loving it together. And it was just a great
commercial
kind of,
anymore.
It was, damn it, at one point.
I just remember.
Right.
If you're starting to disrespect Reese's, we're going to have
a bigger problem.
We're going to have a problem.
I'm just trying to remember last time I saw that commercial. That's all. It's been a while.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
If you're a diehard Gen X grown-up, you can pledge your support by clicking join on YouTube or by becoming a patron at genxgrownup.com/patreon.
We had a lot of experiences around the bulletin board systems. John, you and I ran bulletin boards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
We all played with different bulletin board systems, from the hobbyists all the way up to the corporate stuff.
Sure.
But this panel shouldn't be just about us. We should let some questions come through.
Good point.
Yep. Or experiences.
So does anybody have any questions or any comments or want to talk about their experiences?
Or like, why the hell didn't he talk about this yet?
Right. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things you guys mentioned as far as where to find the phone numbers and where to get mm-hmm. the contacts on them, and kind of skipped over a big, 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 big thing that was across the entire United States was 2600. Getting that magazine.
Oh, yes.
Magazine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. They had like a white pages in there, didn't they?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Well, you go to my county, there's nothing in there. That's the problem. But yeah, right. That was a nationally published magazine. It was a regional or anything. Yeah. And it had every state and broken down by.
You know, I never advertised in that, but I wonder what the fee was to get your bulletin board listed.
I think it was a free listing, wasn't it? It was a free listing.
But it had ads in the magazine, didn't they?
Verified, it was a free.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Then ads in a magazine. That's like how they pay for ads. But basically,
it's like paper Google.
Paper Google. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Those.
Yeah.
We got one
that
right
goes
here.
With our rotary telephone podcast.
So locally, I had a bulletin board in Cobb County here in Atlanta. We actually had I don't remember who originated it. We had an organization of Atlanta SysOps.
Okay.
Maintained a list. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the 404 area code had a BBS. Pretty much had a list of all of the numbers, and we would get together, you know, once every few months, you know, down the street, they would have parties.
Mm-hmm.
It was a community of bulletin.
So it was like a more focused just computer user group. It was specifically of BBS.
SysOps sounds like almost.
There were probably 100 bulletin boards on there.
I can see that in Atlanta. That's just an embarrassment of riches. That's fantastic. I wish I'd been here then.
Well, I mean, and we, you know, I know we had a similar thing at our library, but it was generally geared around, you know, either a system type, like in our case, Commodore 64,
sure.
or
mm-hmm.
it was geared around an area.
Or an interest group.
Yeah.
Yep. Sure. Yep. Yes, sir.
I think first off, I'm just an observation. I think a lot of what you're talking about, maybe us, I think it sounds like something like Reddit.
Reddit definitely is the chat-heavy version of one of the things.
I think you could slice the BBS experience into pieces and trace how it evolved into a certain thing. And I think the, you know, there were certainly chat boards on. I know on my BBSs that I ran, I would have one for. Okay, Babylon 5, Sliders. Well, I mean, whatever sci-fi was on at the time that's now dead, right?
Yep.
And you'd have a section. That's that hobbyist, or the interest group we talked about. But, you know, then that kind of became message boards of the internet day. And then finally Reddit became the ultimate.
And even between there, Usenet groups.
Usenet groups, right?
Yes,
right?
Usenet. Yeah. So
that's a Wild West still.
Yeah, there's some crazy stuff on there.
And you had a second part, go ahead.
Yes, and I think you covered it a little bit, but it feels like a big jump from BBS to the internet where we are today. Can you tell me a little bit about kind of what happened, that kind of bridge between BBS and where we are now?
IRC, internet relay chat. Yep. Anybody have experience with IRC, internet relay chat? I expected like 80% of the hands in the room.
Yeah,
right?
I think that could take a couple hours to talk about, but I mean, briefly, and you guys can expand as you want, but there's certainly, as I said, you could take slices of the BBS world and branch it into how things evolved. FidoNet was the first kind of, a concept of how you could interconnect these things. I mean, of course, ARPANET was being developed, you know, at the university level. It's more organic than you might think because it was really just the same hobbyists that said, how can we project this and make it larger, more accessible, easier to configure? And it's the same stuff that we were doing on BBSs then. I want to chat with people who are like-minded. Or I want to argue with people who aren't. It's fine, too. I want to be able to play games or interact or do something social with people they're doing there.
Right,
I want access to content, whether that might be files that were downloaded and typed in from compute, or whether that's the latest episode of Stranger Things. We want to be able to have access to content and media. And it just, as those things became more complex, remember when Netflix was just mail me DVDs.
Right.
They said, let's try streaming. And like, I can't stream on dial-up, but they started it as people started to get broadband. It's that slow step-by-step, it's too much to do now, let's find a way to make it a little bigger, a little faster, a little more integrated.
Yeah, well, I mean, every time somebody accomplishes something, the next step is, okay, what's the next thing I want to do? Mm-hmm. Okay, now how can I be able to do that? So at first, what's the first thing I want to do? I want to be able to plug a cartridge in a system and play Pac-Man on my TV.
Right, that's level one.
Yeah, now the next thing was, okay, I've got a book full of games. Yep. I want to be able to type them in on something and see what happens. And then after that, it was, okay, I've figured out how to do that. Now I want to run a system that other people can communicate on. It just keeps progressing as you go.
I mean, it's like
time.
A snowball. It rolls and gathers.
I also think it's a little bit of an attitude of, how do we do what we want to do, regardless of the limitations that are in front of us? Like I said, like, I want to be able to, you know, send emails to whoever BBS you're on.
Yeah, we can't do that now.
Well, let's figure out how we can
find a way.
Let's make it happen. You know, maybe it worked perfectly. You know,
and frankly,
awkward.
There were probably 100,000 systems to get that done that didn't work that died.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
It's just the ones that worked got propagated and iterated upon and became.
Well, also because the stuff that worked got shared.
Yeah.
You know, got shared widely and very quickly, too,
actually. Yeah, absolutely. Because there was a whole different mentality there. Instead of it being mine, I'm going to hoard it to myself or whatever. No, it was everybody trying to figure something out together to make something happen.
Yeah. Did I say hand in the back? I thought I did. Yes, sir.
I was just going to say that my experience was that my family got our first computer in the house, like, right on the cusp of the internet becoming a thing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I got to touch BBSs.
Right.
Early days,
Actually, like, one of my good friends in high school had a BBS, single line, and it was really my first experience with file sharing, which you just touched on there. And then, also, because he was my friend already, it was like you got into before, we were chatting live.
Yeah, sure,
and
sure.
That was really a different thing. We were on the phone, but we weren't talking.
Right.
I know. Right. We're using it, but not for the way it was intended.
Yeah.
You know, go ahead.
The file sharing thing was really different. And then we would, you know, use the free AOL.
Oh, more free hours.
You touch on a really fascinating thing. You know, we were joking about the multi-line kind of thing. Did you get your own line? But there's something the internet did to Ma Bell and the phone company was, people getting phones installed in their house in the weirdest places. Why are they putting a phone in this back bedroom? Why are they putting a phone line in the kitchen? Why are they putting a phone line? And then people found out, oh, they're not using the phone. They're using this conduit to do network activity mm-hmm. to some computer and would end up like, well, fine by us. Buy two phone lines. Buy three phone lines. They would care.
No, and I think with every iteration of every step as you go down the progression ladder, it's everything was fascinating. So I remember you and I walking in a mall in Tallahassee, mm-hmm. and we walked into the local, it was Comcast, was the only provider in town that did this.
Still is.
And they were displaying on a computer their always-on internet connection. This was the first time we were leaving that dial-up BBS world.
At that point, I think it was ISDN was their always-on maybe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And I remember distinctly, we clicked on something and the web page loaded like that.
Yep.
And
we went, like that.
Oh, that's a game changer.
But for comparison to what we had seen,
it was like, oh my God, that loaded before I had a chance to breathe. It was really there.
And it's just like a parlor trick. Like, but we're not going to get that in our houses, right? I mean, it's just at the store. And
but
probably for a long time, that was true.
Well, no, I think it was like just a few months later, we started having those
maybe in your neighborhood.
You lived in Tallahassee at that point. You weren't in the country then.
They knew where I came from.
They did.
They weren't going to get that. Really yes, sir.
First of all, I want to say thank you for representing the Atari 800.
Anytime. We could talk for days.
I lived on a military base, and basically it was my father bought one, and then his friend bought one, and then his friend bought one.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, pretty soon it was four of us trading books and magazines back and forth with each other.
Wasn't that glorious? Wasn't that fantastic?
Yeah,
oh, man.
Like, we had like stacks of cassette tapes or cassette drive and all that. It was nuts.
Yep.
I guess my other thing is that when we talk about BBS and playing games, now we're looking at cloud computing.
Mm-hmm.
And like the cloud and how basically I can pull up my phone and my PlayStation 5 can be on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
So what is your guys' opinion on that?
Well,
think we're progressing in a good way or what's
Well, and sometimes the compute isn't even real. Even the compute is virtualized in the cloud. Now, the cloud is just some other computer, but it's not gear you have to own even.
No. And Mo hinted at a little while ago is do it for my job. I work at the main data center for all state agencies here in Florida, and I'm one of the managers of that.
We're in Georgia.
We're in Georgia.
You said in Florida.
No, you said here in Florida.
Okay, here in Florida. Edit this out of the podcast. Leave me alone.
This is the part I'm keeping for sure.
But cloud computing and all of that is such it's a very controversial topic in my industry right now because it really stems more around security. For us, back in the day, security wasn't a concern. On these bulletin board systems, mm-hmm. it never dawned on me that somebody was out there to be malicious and hurt me or my computer in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. We talked about cutting the leads on the Amiga 500.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We did that with blind trust, having a dot matrix printed sheet of paper mm-hmm. that we just like, okay, here's the diagram. All right, cut this one, boop, and then plug it back in.
Dot matrix printer.
Yeah.
Peel the tractor feet off the edge.
I mean, I am a bit concerned with cloud computing just because of the security aspect of it and how things are going in that direction these days, but if you don't progress, you're dead.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's the direction we're going. I think it's wonderful. I mean, the more stuff we can make available to more people, great. But, there's a downside to everything, right? I mean, I was talking to my girlfriend the other day, talking about how, I can't remember directions anymore because, it's because of my phone and things like that. Yeah, mm-hmm. phone numbers.
Yep.
But my kids never heard a busy signal in their life. Things change. But I have faith that things are going to be better. And ultimately, I think it's going to be better.
I think the benefits of that, far outweigh, the risks. And we'll mitigate the risks. We'll find what they are. And circle back to your question about the Atari 800. I was just over in the computing museum over there, and I saw an 800 XL with a FujiNet on it, right? Which is effectively, hey, you love your Atari 8-bit or Commodore or whatever? Plug this thing on it and access a file system. Don't worry about dial-up BBS now.
Right.
Just touch these servers that are out there at open and get those disk images and bring those things in. And it's like having the access to the entire library and knowledge and wealth that we accumulated in the 80s accessible at your fingertips. And if for someone who is a nostalgia junkie like I am, like we are, there's the risk of what that could introduce is far outweighed by the joy you will get out of it by exploring it, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's a wondrous world we live in now, but it was just a little bit more wonderful back then.
You have one more question.
Yeah.
Preach. Are you guys active on any of the present-day
like,
Telnet BBSs?
You know, we have a big-time follower of Gen X Grown Up who runs some Telnet BBS, and I visit his periodically. I don't frequent it regularly, but I love that they exist. Like, it's one of those things, like, I don't have time to do that right now, but I'm happy it exists. I'm so happy that stuff be kept alive, you know, and that I go to it. I go to it periodically. Yeah, that's fantastic. Okay.
Yeah.
Gents, I think we have covered. We have some great comments from you guys. I want to thank all of you for taking the time. Yes, please.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What year did you have your BBSs?
Whew. Uh-oh. All right. Now,
so we have a bow to pick. Be
graduated.
I didn't take my ginseng today, so I'm trying to. Let's see.
Like 88, 89 era, and then again, a different one for
now,
our Star
mine,
Trek Club in 90, 91.
I had to have mine because that was middle school, 86.
Yeah.
Yeah, 80. No, 84.
Wow.
84.
You were in middle school watching other people type on the machine?
Yep, sure.
Yeah, wow.
Okay.
Yep.
What?
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
What was wrong with
When did you
that?
Run yours? What?
Probably like 83 through the
early days.
Sure.
Early days.
And I think I only ran mine for about a year.
Yeah. Well, I ran one on the Atari, then one later on my Amiga. Both for fun.
I had a Commodore 64 one.
Nice.
Yep. An Amiga one, and then I eventually had a PC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got a tattle. I'm pretty sure his mom made him get the second line.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, sounds like you have so she can talk on the phone, basically.
It sounds like you're a big enough hobbyist. She's like, okay, he's going to be doing this. Let's remove the pain points. So.
There's one question I want to ask, because I know you had this, I was always jealous of it, but I want to know if anybody else in the room had it. Anybody else have the War Games modem?
Oh, the acoustic coupler that you put the handset in?
Anybody else?
No.
Oh, my God. Shut up. Jesus. I want one now. Is there one for sale at the convention? I don't care if it even works. I just want one of those
on
a desk.
Like multi-line rotary phones are on display like our museum pieces in the other room. It's amazing. Anyway.
Remember the days of the rotary phone?
Oh, yeah.
That does not work.
It's still connected.
Yeah. There was never that clean of a signal ever.
If he missed the handshake signal, it's not going to happen.
It was secret military tech. It did work.
But it was still, seeing that in that movie, and knowing that I just had the little plug. I had the C64 and the 300 baud modem that plugged into the cartridge port on the back, and you had the telephone. That's all I had. I always thought, because I had that my device was lacking somehow. I didn't find out until later that my device was far superior to that. But I wanted that physical thing down. I wanted that so bad.
All right. I know we're just a bit over time. Again, as I was saying, thank you all for taking the time to be here. If you enjoy our kind of craziness, we would certainly love if you would check us out and give us an audition. We have some cards up here to pick up. We're Gen X Grown Up, both on YouTube and as a podcast. You can find wherever you find podcasts, of course. But we're very grateful.
Yes.
George,
thank
Mo,
you.
Thanks, everyone. We appreciate you. Have a great rest
of your
show.
Thank you, guys.
Fantastic.
Appreciate it.
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com.
Washing shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Don't know.
I paid extra. We've already got your money out.
That is the premium.
Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.